All right, welcome to Speak for Yourself. I'm Jason Whitlock. That's Marcellus Wiley, that dude.
Yes, sir.
Coming up, we'll tell you if the Chiefs offense can outsmart Bill Belichick.
And I've got another installment, you're welcome, of the Emmy Award-winning That Dude's Dude.
Da-da-da-da!
But we start every day with a Whitlock. What you got today, big dog?
Oh, I can't decide if Colin Kaepernick is a world-class Twitter troll or a world-class attention whore. I go back and forth. I know what he's not. He's not a serious activist fighting for racial equality. He's not the modern-day Muhammad Ali. He's not even a poor man's Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf. Ali and Rauf had real beliefs backed by religious conviction. Kaepernick just wants to be famous. That's the only explanation for the controversy he and his girlfriend Nessa are stirring around the NFL Super Bowl halftime performance. Rappers Travis Scott and Big Boy are being vilified by the Bonnie and Clyde of social justice warrioring for agreeing to perform at Super Bowl 53. Earlier this week, Variety reported that Scott consulted with Kaepernick, before agreeing to shout mostly inaudible words into a microphone during halftime of America's biggest television show / sporting event. Well, now today, TMZ has unearthed indisputable Twitter evidence that Cap doesn't approve of Scott's performance. Cap retweeted a New York radio host who tweeted, "Cap did not approve of this bull bleep. Get the bleep out of here." Nessa also retweeted the radio host, but unlike her highly reluctant to speak boyfriend, Nessa added words to her retweet. Facts, they need to stop lying. TMZ also reported Nessa's earlier tweet, which labeled Big Boy a sellout for performing. She added, "If you're with them, you definitely are not with us." Let's take a step back and examine the childishness and the absurdity of the whole thing. Remember when you were in grade school and you passed notes rather than tell someone what you really think? That's what all this tweeting and retweeting is. Kaepernick doesn't have the courage to stand up and speak like a man or woman. He retweets or lets Nessa or the Kaepernicks talk for him. Why not hold a press conference and explain publicly to everyone how Travis Scott's halftime performance will harm black people? I also want you to consider that Cap and Nessa have elected themselves as the arbiters for black racial loyalty. Nessa is Egyptian. She's not black. Cap, as you know, is mixed race and was raised by the very lovely all-white Kaepernick family. Somehow we've allowed this unmarried, 75% not black power couple to masquerade as the new millennial Martin and Coretta or Malcolm and Betty Shabazz. They get to call Big Boy a sellout and shame Travis Scott for doing exactly what Kaepernick wishes he was doing in 2 weeks, playing in the Super Bowl. Can we stop this? Does Cap realize on Super Bowl Sunday, all the players will be wearing Nike uniforms? Has Cap asked Nike to not provide uniforms for the Super Bowl? Can we get a detailed list of who does and doesn't get to participate in the Super Bowl? Should the black players on each team boycott the Super Bowl? Colin Kaepernick has been throwing a tantrum from the moment San Francisco gave his job to Blaine Gabbert. He's mad NFL ratings have recovered from his first publicity stunt. He now wants to damage a couple of black rappers with his latest Hey Look At Me stunt. This is the behavior of a spoiled child, not a freedom fighter. Joining the desk now are Fox NFL analysts Mark Schlereth and James Harrison. Marcellus, I'll start with you. This is all about attention. I've said it from day one, 3 years ago when this started, and I say it again today. This guy just wants to be famous. This has nothing to do with any sort of cause.
I agree with your essay, damn near wholeheartedly. And I'm reluctant to be in that place because we all know that there's a cause that Kaepernick is standing for or kneeling for. And then there's a career that has been lost in part because of what Kaepernick did to himself and what others have done to Kaepernick in reaction to NFL owners. So I have to separate the cause from his career. And once I do that, and your essay eloquently puts you in that place to realize Kaepernick is now turning into a comedy of errors. And it's really a mishandling of the cause, because you could be for the cause, Kaepernick, Nessa, but I'm from the cause. You know, I'm from what we're talking about, the social injustice. And it's not a badge of honor I walk around with to show everyone that, look, I'm from it. But I've been through it, man, and I know what it looks like when it's real, when it's authentic. And I think what happened was not your essay. It was to imply, to tell Big Boy from Outkast to even have it in reference that he's a sellout. That cuts deep. That's Daddy Fat Sacks, the one that rides the Cadillacs. Stays down for the streets because the streets is where his folks at. Better know that. Some say pro-black, he says professional. People don't understand it. Outkast 10, 15 years ago saw this coming. And you look at them and they're one of the reasons why we have so many different contexts of culture, so many different complexions of culture, so many different varieties of culture. And now Kaepernick and Nessa wants it to be monolithic. Check in with Kaepernick to do what? That's your career choice and that's what you're going through. And we're gonna separate that from the plight and the cause. Because Travis Scott, don't check in with him. And Travis Scott even said that. I don't have to check in with Cap. And Big Boy certainly doesn't have to check in with Cap. If Big Boy's a sellout, and if Nessa wants to say that if you're not with us, you're against us, if you want to have that childlike behavior, you draw the line, I'm not going to stand on the side with you. If you're going to point at Big Boy from Outkast, and you're going to point at others who are not expressing it the same exact way as you are, and now damn them, the damn me. Because I am not for this. I'm for the cause. Because I'm from the cause, and I wish that they would get their understandings in alignment with the cause.
Yeah, definitely. I don't feel like he should be saying anything. I don't see how you could tell another grown man exactly what it is that he should do or how he should approach a situation. You know, he did what he did. He made a deal where they would donate a certain amount of money to causes for that, and to sit back and make like he has to ask permission or get your permission, you know. I haven't had to ask permission since, you know, I was 18 years old and you know, my daddy, he's gone and my mom, she's still around. But even to this day, I'm a grown man. She'll give me advice, but at the end of the day, I don't have to get her permission to do anything. So for you to be a stranger and to tell another grown man that, you know, he needs to be able to come to you and have you assert what he's doing and say, hey, it's cool for you to do that. It makes no sense to me. Like this whole era of everybody believing they're bigger than what they are or they want to be more than what they are, it's ridiculous.
You know, I think one of the things, and one of the things I loved about being in a locker room my whole life is we could break down barriers and we could break down the issues of race and the issues of religion and the issues of politics and just care about one another and just play for one another. And ultimately, there are a lot of people in this world that are doing a lot of good. There's a lot of NFL players that are doing a lot of good in the realm of social injustice, of being in the communities and working and doing that. This, to me, seems to be just a dividing factor. Let's continue. Let's, within the cause of social injustice, let's divide that cause. Like, that's not bringing people together.
No.
That's dividing people even further. And that's, for me, the disappointing part of watching this whole thing play out. You know, I look at what's happened to him, and do I think he's better than some of the guys in the National Football League? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Do I think he'll humble himself enough to say, yeah, I'll take a backup, I'll do what RG3 did in Baltimore and say, I'll mentor a young guy like Lamar Jackson and I'll work to get my career back? Like, are you willing to do that? I'll take it a step further. Are you like Tim Tebow, who's had multiple jobs and multiple offers to change positions? Or to go to the Canadian Football League and say, no, I just wanted to be a quarterback, so now I'm going to be a baseball player. Like, what are you willing to do to get your career back? Are you willing to go to be a backup to the point where you no longer have the...
Go
the,
to Canada, like myself.
Right, where you don't have the platform anymore? Because being a backup quarterback in the National Football League doesn't give you the platform to be the spokesperson that you are right now. So I would just say I don't like the division within what's going on here, and it just feels like, you know, as a country, we are such a divided people right now. And I've always said the thing about the locker room, our strengths are our differences. That's what makes us great. Just, I mean, as football players, as people, like the greatest strength we have as people is the fact that we are wonderfully created, made in the image of God, and we're all different. God, could you imagine how unbelievably boring life would be if we were all the same and we were all gifted with the same with the same things?
Yeah, that leads me back to the whole situation with the kneeling and, you know, where the Steelers, you know, we had our situation in Chicago where we were trying to decide what we wanted to do, you know. And, you know, we decided that we couldn't kneel because we had a guy in there that was Alejandro Villanueva, and he served time in the military. And Al was like, you know what? I've sat there with 18, 19-year-old men who believed in everything that that flag stood for, and they died for that. And he was like, for me to go out there, I understand what you're representing as far as trying to make it aware of social injustice. He was like, but I can't do it because of that. He was like, guys, just I sat there and held guys and watched them die. And we understood, like, okay, he can't kneel. All right. It was, you know, maybe a few guys that wanted to kneel. So we're like, this is what we're going to do. We're just going to stay inside and we're going to remove ourselves from the situation. I mean, it didn't work out that way, but that's, you know, what the agreement had came down to.
I just wish that Kaepernick or Kaepernick supporters, but primarily just Kaepernick, explain to me why the Super Bowl is being set up as the line in the sand. And why halftime at Super Bowl is the line in the sand. That
how many people watch it?
But no, that's I get it. But again, people watch the game. And so that's what makes me say, this is just a publicity stunt. Because show me how whatever transpires at halftime, how does it stop the oppression you're talking about, the injustice you're talking about? How does it make one black child born into poverty or even born into what? How does it improve their life if Travis Scott or Big Boi don't perform or if there's some sort of controversy around halftime of the Super Bowl? How does that move the cause forward? The only cause it moves forward is Kaepernick's cause. And I got this is where I've been from day one. And Nessa, to me, her one of her tweets answers every question for me. She said, there is no mutual respect and there is no understanding for anyone working against Colin Kaepernick, period. And again, she didn't say there's no mutual understanding, there's no understanding for anyone working against the cause of black empowerment. It's Kaepernick. And again, that's what I've been saying from word go. This has always been about Kaepernick, not the cause. This is in her own words.
Yeah, that really offended me. Really offended me. I mean, highly miscalculated tweet to now align in full marriage Kaepernick with the cause. Well, there are so many other soldiers out there, including Big Boi, including Travis Scott. $500,000 donated.
Yes.
Just for going to the Super Bowl. We don't have to all do it the same way to get it done. Ultimate team sport.
Right. Isn't that what makes it, isn't that what it's beautiful though?
That's
is everybody's
crazy.
everybody's doing something different. You know, those the guys who are involved, the people who are involved are doing it the way that they're comfortable doing it. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. So basically if you're not with Kaepernick and you don't do it his way, this could go a lot of places. So if you don't kneel, are you
a sellout? You got to be. If you're not doing it his way, you got to be.
Bring it, then.
According to what she just tweeted right there.
If you're not with them, you're against them. You have no mutual respect. Like, enlighten black people. Nuanced black people who are not sitting there at extremes and trying to be so polarizing but really trying to be effective is laughing at this. That loud minority on Twitter, online, that is getting you gassed up and drunk on your power, you need to calm down. And really, first of all, when you from it, the voiceless, the powerless, growing up and seeing it like that, trust me, man, we need effective resources to come back here. We don't need your hype and retweets and likes and clicks. That may be part of your ammunition to get your platform to a greater place, but now there's a greater responsibility. And I'm not seeing that. When I see you take shot at other soldiers in the same fight as you, that friendly fire, it doesn't land lightly.
We all put off doing things we know we need to do. I mean, we know we need to organize the garage or go for that workout, but something always gets in the way. Funny how home security can be like that. You know, it's a good idea, but there's always something holding you back. Well, now is the time to act because Simply Safe Home Security's extended holiday sale ends soon. Simply Safe believes nothing should come between you and protecting your home. They've gotten rid of the reasons not to get home security. There's no contract ever, no price markups from any middleman, and no installation windows. Who has time for that? Most importantly, their system is engineered to do one thing brilliantly: protect. So, if a storm takes out your power, Simply Safe is ready. If an intruder cuts your phone lines, Simply Safe is ready. If they destroy your keypad or siren, Simply Safe will still get you the help you need. Maybe it's overkill. Maybe it's the last thing you want to think about this holiday. But with Simply Safe, you're always ready for anything. Just go to simplysafe.com/speak. That's SimpliSafe.com. Whitlock and Wiley, Mark Slareth is back, and we're joined now by four-time Pro Bowl linebacker, Kansas City Chief legend, Derek Johnson. All right, time for a big story. Let's move to Kansas City, where the Chiefs host the Patriots in the AFC Championship game Sunday. With Patrick Mahomes under center and weapons like Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce, Kansas City put together one of the most prolific scoring attacks in NFL history. But this week, they will have to contend with Bill Belichick, one of the sharpest defensive minds ever, who has made a career of taking away his opponent's favorite mode of attack. The question here is, what's more intimidating, Kansas City's offensive weapons or Bill Belichick's defensive mind? And I'm gonna say Bill Belichick's defensive mind, he's just done it so many times. I go back to, and I know it was a high scoring Super Bowl, but they faced Atlanta in the Super Bowl with all those weapons, and Bill Belichick figured out a way, particularly in the second half and the fourth quarter, to get them stopped and for New England to rally and win that game. Look, man, the guy's got 5 Super Bowls. He's coached in 8 Super Bowls. Bill Belichick versus anybody, he always scares me more than anything else.
Man, I am going to say, for clarity, I am saying the KC weapons. However, the definition of intimidating is to make timid or fearful, and I'm scared of Belichick, and I'm scared of that mind. That sucker, one playoff series came out in a 2-5 defense. I remember it. Like, I was like, a 2-5, 2 down linemen, 5 linebackers, we're going to figure this thing out. And I remember when Doug Flutie was rolling with us, and no one could figure out Doug Flutie. Everyone thought he had his slights and his height issues and stuff, but he was just balling, Pro Bowl year, balling out of control. And we faced the Jets the second time, and he was the defensive coordinator, Bill Belichick. He even said it, basically. We were looking, we were like, it's like, we're just going to blitz from the outside, keep him contained, and let's see what he does there inside that pocket, see if he can get those passing lanes. And he couldn't. And we were like, damn it. He figured it out. The Rubik's Cube, he always figures out. But for clarity, I'll go back to my original statement. KC's offensive weapons, they're going to thrive. Belichick's going to slow them down. He's going to minimize them, but they're still going to be too much, and they're going to be victorious.
I just look at KC in general. If you take the playoff teams that are currently established with New Orleans and with KC and with the Rams and obviously with New England, I can make a compelling argument. They have the 3 greatest weapons in all the playoffs right now: Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill, and Patrick Mahomes. And I will tell you, talking to defensive coordinators as I travel around doing games, they say, I have had several coordinators say, you watch him on film, Tyreek Hill. You watch him on film and you think he's fast and he's incredible. He goes, when he is on the field, I had one defensive coordinator say, the fastest player on the field that I have ever witnessed, ever. And it reminds me back in the day when you talk to guys who try to cover Randy Moss. Yeah. And they'd all say the same thing. On film, he was so smooth. You'd say, oh, yeah, I can run with Randy. I can run with Randy. And then you get on the field and he just run by you and look like he gave no effort. They have great weapons. Now, that said, Bill Belichick will devise a plan to take one away. And I think he'll rotate through which one he's going to take away dependent upon situations. Maybe it's Kelce down in the red zone in the seams. Maybe it's Tyreek Hill in the field. But the bottom line is you can't take them all away. And Patrick Mahomes is that X factor. Once he breaks out, I mean, what do you want me to throw left-handed? What do you want me to underhanded, overhanded, around somebody's body? I mean, that they are freak shows, man.
Yeah, that's true. Well, you know, from my experience, I have to go with the players, the weapons, with the Kansas City Chiefs, just because, man, players always beat scheme. It always be. You can have a great scheme, but if you got some great weapons around, players always beat scheme. And we can flip it. You know, with Tom Brady and can he handle Bob Sutton's defense and his scheme at Arrowhead? Mm-hmm. He probably can. So at the same time, I will go with Tom Brady, just trying to, because players beat scheme at the end of the day, man.
DJ, great players,
DJ.
Beat.
DJ,
a good.
You're talking about Bill Belichick.
Yeah, DJ, you know,
he's watching at home. You just put Bob Sutton in the same category as Bill Belichick.
No, I didn't. But at the same time, I'm just telling you, it's one thing to have a scheme, and you're saying, hey, this is the perfect scheme. This is what we're going to do. And then Tyreek Hill gets out there, and his over route is a lot faster than what you saw on film.
Right.
I'm telling you, it's just like that.
Yeah, it's crazy. It goes back to one of those stories of folklore. Deion Sanders ran back a kick one time, and they're sitting there next day, special teams meeting, and they're saying, hey, man, you know, coach got the red dot on everybody. Run harder. Cut them off. Get the right angles. Geometry. It's like, coach, we out there running. He got a car or something. Like, he in a vehicle. Like, there's no catching. And you're right. Yeah. You do not prepare for that. We try all the time. Grab the fastest backup receiver. Mm-hmm. Make him be Tyreek Hill. Okay.
Yeah.
His name is not Tyreek Hill, coach. Right. And when you get out there, I think what you're saying is it's going to be a tremendous scheme, but there is a way to be superior to that scheme, which is execution with that talent.
All right, exactly DJ, right. What about this, though? And I hope you're right, but the second time around for Belichick seeing these guys this year, that to me makes it even more intimidating. You give Bill Belichick a second bite at the apple?
Well, I think this is two different defenses now. You're talking about an away defense, what he played at the early other year. Kansas City defense was an away team because they were at the Patriots. Yeah. Now, we're talking about a Kansas City really good top 10 defense at home.
Sure.
Different kind of defense now. Not saying that they will stop everything Tom Brady throws at them, but this is going to be a different game. I mean, but Belichick's going to have his deal because they thrived on him. Patrick Mahomes did a great job. I mean, he came back. They were about to be out of it, about to get blown out, and Patrick Mahomes came back in New England. Now you have him at home in the cold. It's going to be interesting.
When you watch Kansas City, and I got to give Andy Reid a ton of credit because they do a great job from a deceptive standpoint, their creation of deceptives. And one of the things that they're amazing at is they'll give you the same formation with the same kind of ghost motion or jet motion, and they'll jet motion with the formation, they'll run dive. Then they'll jet motion with that same formation, they'll throw a screen to the jet guy. Then they'll jet motion, they'll throw a screen opposite the jet guy. Then, I mean, and what ends up happening is you get five distinctly different plays that all look identical from the start with the motion, and you really only change two guys' responsibilities. Mm. And that's what makes him, like, you want to talk about nuanced offense. What makes nuanced offense or the evolution of offense great is when your play action stuff lines up identically to what you run in your run game. And that's where Andy Reid's, I hate using genius in football because I think they're mutually exclusive events, but that's where his genius comes out. Everything looks identical. And it gets you as a defender.
Yeah.
You've been on your heels because you're like guessing.
And you know the biggest part of that swing guy, that decoy guy, is Tyreek Hill. So he's going to get a lot of attention. So when he's flaring out, it's not like, oh, let's just let him flare out. Let's get back into coverage and do our deal. It's Tyreek Hill. So the whole defense kind of shifts over there. So he opens up the world for everything.
Right. And Andy Reid plays to what the defense is taught because you're taught to read your keys, trust your eyes. But they changed the locks. You're like, this is the same exact key. You put it in one time, it works. Next time, it doesn't. Because you're saying, hey, guard goes down. This is my read.
Yes.
And then next time, you know, you shouldn't have done that. You actually got to do something different. And it's
right.
So complex.
Think about you're an outside linebacker. You're a curl flat defender, right? And all of a sudden, Tyreek Hill's out there. How much curl are you getting? How much depth on your curl?
Not much, right?
No. You're supposed to be 12 yards deep. Right. You're like, I got to get out of here right now. And then that hole that you just left is a 22-foot hole where you're just like, yeah.
Jason Whitlock, Marcellus Wiley. We're joined now by NBA champion Dante Jones.
Yeah.
Let's move to the NBA, where the Warriors put on a show last night with a record-setting 51 points in the first quarter of what turned into a 142-111 rout of the Nuggets. The Warriors took over first place in the West with the win. Afterwards, Kevin Durant was asked if the Golden State was making a statement, and he said, quote, no, I think they know who we are.
I do think he was making a statement,
and the statement was, we can flip this switch whenever we want to, and we will flip this switch when we want to, and I can't argue with him right now. They flipped the switch.
Hey, he's right. KD's right. That's a level of gangsterism right there. Like, I ain't making no statement.
Gangsterism?
like gangsterism. Like, he, like, statements are for people you don't know about. You know who we are. Don Dottas, baby. We going for three in a row. Right. And that is amazing that he has that kind of Jedi mind skill over other teams, other opponents. But here's the real of it. If you look at what the Golden State Warriors did, they intentionally poured it on thick on the Nuggets, who were the number one seed. They basically wanted you to know no one should gain confidence, even in regular season moments. Like, we really needed to see Kenan Ivory Wayans just pop up and say, message. That's what that was, a message. Not so much statement like, oh, we've arrived or hit the switch. Just remind y'all who's the best, and they are.
It was their first opportunity to hunt. And that's good for them in their season right now. They got a chance to go against the number one seed and show their dominance. They are the favorite to win the championship by far. Now, they've shown some chinks in their armor along during the season, and they still have some things to figure out with Boogie Cousins coming back. Right. But they are the most dominant team in basketball right now. And they showed it last night, and they got a chance to get excited for a game finally within this season. And that's what it's about. That's the best part about the NBA.
The thing you said that's interesting is Boogie will be back, I think, Friday.
Changes everything.
But that's not good.
In a good way or bad?
Changes everything. It just changes. Like, Boogie is used to having the ball in his hands. Boogie's not a facilitator. Boogie's a scorer. He's a rebounder. He is not – his deficiencies were his pick-and-roll defense and his ability to guard at the basket, and that's something that they need, and they're one of the best switching teams. And can he switch and guard the ball – coming back from injury. So he changes changes how they spread the ball out and how they get him touches. They have to get him touches because he demands touches because his talent level demands touches.
Good changes or bad changes?
We don't know. It's all up in the air. It could be good. It could be bad. I don't see Boogie, who's trying to get a max contract, going in there just feeding other people and trying to get them set up because then his numbers won't satisfy the criteria to get a max. So what kind of Boogie are we going to get coming off injury? We don't know. We just don't know.
Boogie's
I don't think it's bad.
Boogie's going to get his money regardless.
Yeah. No. You thought that last – offseason, Boogie was going to get his money regardless.
Ooh.
And he had no suitors, and he had to take a little bit of humble pie and go find the right team for him. So it's not a definite because they're young teams with cap space. And you got to find the right dynamic for Boogie. Like, it's not a just throw it up. He's not LeBron James. He's not Paul George. Mm. He's not Russell Westbrook. Everybody's going to give them the max.
Wow. Well, the doubters is singular. And
no, because he hasn't won. He hasn't won yet. Like, what? Why am I giving you money? Have you shown winning yet? That's what you give the money for.
No, I get
winning.
That. Yeah. My mind's blown now because I was on the high from what I saw from Golden State just resetting the landscape. And now
I don't think Boogie can mess up what we saw last night.
There's no way he can mess up that floor.
I really don't because. They'll just sit him back down.
I'm not saying he's going to mess it
up. They'll just sit him down.
Don't get it twisted. And, yeah, are they going to sit him down? Are they going to deal with the unhappy Boogie? Is Boogie going to go out? Draymond Green is great to me because he'll go out there and have 0 points, 10 rebounds. He'll be happy with 8 assists and be like, you know what? I dominated the game on the defensive end, and that's how I got it. That's not how Boogie judges himself, and that's not how he's been doing it throughout his career. So we don't know what he's going to give.
We need to be patient because Boogie comes back on Friday against the Clippers. We know that's not going to go well. So after they play the Clippers, then we can judge this because it's going to be
all
a horrible start.
Let's move to another team facing doubters these days.
It happens.
The Lakers, who beat the Bulls last night, bouncing back from a pretty rough stretch as LeBron remained sidelined with a groin injury. But the outcome of the game didn't get as much attention as what happened at halftime, with people up in arms after Kyle Kuzma sent a cryptic tweet tagging the website Ball is Life. Look, I didn't write this cryptic. I didn't find it cryptic. This is the kind of thing I do all the time. I accidentally tweet stuff because I'm just fumbling around with my cell phone
and don't know what I'm doing.
Fumbling around with what?
Don't know what you're doing.
Yeah, I really, I don't know what I'm doing. My cell phone.
I get what you're saying. Yeah. Sometimes your phone is open and
pressing. Ain't nobody ever hit a tweet with letters in it accidentally. You were already writing it, so that wasn't an accident, right? Ball is life accidentally just came through auto check. Like, the spell check was like, ball is life. No, man, you were there.
You changed my
No, exactly. You hit that.
It's hard to hit just ball is life.
Yeah.
Sorry. I had a whole different mindset going into it, but like, can you just put ball is life in the subject? And then accidentally tweet it?
Let's be real. One, there's an NBA rule that 45 minutes before tip-off, no social media and all that, right? Shut it down until after the game and you fulfill your media responsibilities.
That's why I think it's an accident.
But players have their phones open at halftime, communicating with people that have an impact on how they play and give them critical information on what they're doing or checking their stats. So players have their phones on and just staying in contact with the world, period.
Right.
At halftime looking through their phone. So I was going to give him the benefit of the doubt and say, you know what, maybe it is an accident, but then when you look at what it was, it wasn't letters. No. It wasn't.
He didn't say anything.
No, but you got to get ball's life in there. So I'm 50-50 on this.
It was their handle. It was their Twitter handle.
Because they were giving him shine. So he wanted to get more shine. He's like, if I send them something, then that's basically a retweet. And everybody's going to go to ball's life.
I can't go all off into detail on this, but this is the honest to God truth. I once posted a picture on Facebook at like 1 a.m. I'm in Vegas at 1 a.m.
You wired up.
No, I was completely sober, but I don't know what I'm doing with my cell phone, and somehow a picture that had no business being on Facebook was on Facebook. And my head
Can we get footage of that, please?
I mean,
can we get that? Can we get that out? It's there.
My head nearly exploded. And I was with some young people, and I gave them my phone and was like, get this off my Facebook, because I didn't even know how to do it.
Really? What was it? Yeah. Ball is life.
But that's
it wasn't
ball. Ball is life.
It wasn't nothing
it was Rhino
compared
was
to
life.
What you were doing at that point in time.
I'm Vegas, all right. Ball is life. So, I've been winning.
I can just see how accidentally that can happen.
Yeah, whatever. I don't. We've all been in that situation before. The accidental tweet, okay, why can't it say something that is negative towards you or something that's bad or something?
He didn't say nothing, Marcellus.
He said something to promote himself. That's not an accident. An accidental promotional tweet during halftime. Are you serious? That sounds like a campaign more than anything. So, no, I'm not going there with Kuzma. He's 23. I get it. At 23.
Is it a big deal?
It's not a big deal. My heart says he did it on mistake. My head right now is saying, you know what, maybe it was kind of cryptic, and maybe he was just going.
What's cryptic about it, though?
Because it just brings attention to yourself at that point in time. Nobody's tweeting on halftime. And you're in L.A.
Yeah.
You play for the Lakers. You have all the scrutiny on you because you play with LeBron James, and LeBron's not playing.
Your coach is under fire. He done told you need passion.
It's the Luke watch going on right now.
Why haven't he deleted it then? He didn't delete it. If it was actually when you deleted it.
Because it didn't say nothing, Marcellus.
It said a lot. If you went to the ball is life at that time, you saw Kuzma highlights. Like, it's crazy. Come on, man.
And now we're talking about him today.
Yeah, there it is.
Time for my favorite segment. Time to get antisocial. Derek, you ever been hit with Twitter off?
Just now.
We don't like Twitter comments, so we want the real. Darnell Smith, our social media manager's here.
Ball State's
finest.
Ball is life state.
Yeah.
All right.
Darnell, what's cracking out there on those Twitter streets?
Yeah, we're going to start off in the NFL.
Yeah.
Former Jaguars DB's coach Perry Fuel was just hired as DB coach for the Carolina Panthers. Seems like Jalen Ramsey isn't a fan of his old coach tweeting, good luck, with the laughing emoji. Twitter came down on him hard, but Jalen responded to the hater saying, no coach made me. I'm God's son. He blessed me with all this. And adding, don't let man take credit for what God did, ever. This is just the latest of Jalen Ramsey's antics. Do y'all have an issue with him calling out his former coach?
I don't like it, but I'm a little fascinated by his don't let man take credit for what God did ever. Mm. I wonder if he fully understands that, you know, God works through man and woman. He puts people in your life to help elevate you and bring out the best in you. And so none of us are an island. God didn't intend for us to be an island. He expected us to work and deal with each other.
Well, speaking of God, you know, he'd like you to be humble
And he'd like you to recognize the fact that, yeah, he blessed you. You won the genetic lottery, no question about it. But he blessed you with people to help coach you, to help nurture you, to help grow you into the player that you are. And you're becoming more of a nuisance in my mind. You're becoming more of a mouth than you are. Like, when your talent level, and you're extremely gifted, you're extremely talented, but you're more of a headache. Like, you take him and you take, you know, all these superstars that I wish I could buy them for what they're worth and sell them for what they think they're worth. You put all those guys on the same team, they win about three games.
Wow. Mm. Well, I like it. I like it. Look, not everybody in your life is about that life and is about your success. Sometimes you run against somebody who's going to make you take a step backward or take two steps forward. You never know how this goes. So I don't know their relationship, so I'm not going to sit here from this vantage point from afar and condemn the man. And there is a scripture in the Bible that says, be hot or cold, not lukewarm, shall spit you out of my mouth. Jalen Ramsey stays hot. You know what? God ain't going to spit you out of his mouth. You stay hot, boy. Yeah. So stay a hot boy.
Amen to that. But I tell you what.
Okay.
Players, I see the direction he was going. Players, you know, do make coaches at times or lift coaches because of their player on the field. But his delivery was terrible. It's terrible. His delivery was terrible. And then he tried to clean it up by adding God in there.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
and then
yeah,
it kind of messed it up. But he's a great player, but that was just a bad delivery. Very bad.
Mm. All right, Darnell, what's next?
Yeah, staying with the NFL, where Saints QB Drew Brees has a lot to celebrate this week.
Hey.
Not only is he headed to the NFC Championship, but he's also just had his 40th birthday party. And Brees was all about the turn up. Yeah. Look at his shoulders right there. Yeah. I don't know what it's called, but I like it. What do you guys think of his dance move?
I'm incorporating that into whatever it is I do on the dance floor.
Don't you go
that is
there.
That is sharp.
Show us a move, Mark.
Look at
what was that? What was this one?
Right? Yeah.
Throw it away.
All right, look, I'm probably going to get in trouble with this, but
we got to grade
him on a curve now. I mean.
Oh, don't you do that. Don't you do that. Now,
you know he's a little short on rhythm.
That changed in the 90s. That changed in the 90s. New kids on the block and all that changed. It's level playing field now.
But what I tell you about,
what
I tell you about him though, for an older guy to be involved like that, that's what you grade him on. Just to be accepted like that and to be cool and kid, you know, like the other guys he's playing against. So I grade him on that.
Like he's in his 20s. You an older guy too?
I know. That's why I can appreciate way him dancing out there.
You, DJ,
I'm 36.
got the Allen Iverson earrings in. Clean too.
Brother Malcolm up here with the earrings too. You just throwing me off.
No. This is a young George Jefferson.
Okay. I like it.
I don't know what it is. Oh, love it. Hey, Drew Brees been doing that from day one. I went to his wedding when he was a young player in the league. He was on the dance floor cutting rugs then in his 20s. Still the same dude, same old OG, man. Respect to Drew Brees. Yeah. And have
DJ,
that
look, as bad as that looks, man, LeBron's jealous.
Darnell,
what's next?
Let's move on to a hot topic in college football.
Man.
Alabama quarterback Jalen Hurts has committed to play a senior season at Oklahoma. Ooh. He announced his decision today via a story on the Players Tribune. As a graduate transfer, he is eligible to play immediately. And Hurts is the third high-profile QB to transfer to Oklahoma after Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray. But do y'all think this is a good fit?
I think it speaks to Jalen Hurts and being a competitor. Because they got a five-star quarterback coming into Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. They got a redshirt freshman that was a big-time recruit. Jalen Hurts ain't scared. And so he's going to compete and going to play for Lincoln Riley, the quarterback guru of college football.
Riley.
I like the move.
Lincoln Riley.
Yeah. He ain't scared? Yeah. Why'd he stay at Alabama last year?
What do you mean?
That was a Nick Foles move. You know that you weren't getting that job back from Tua. He took your job in the national championship game in the second half. I'm out. Like, and then I have four games the next year to go. I'm out. Like, I mean, I respect Jalen Hurts, and I just think he's sunning Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray. I think the competitor in him is like, forget who's coming in. I'm on that level with those guys, and look what happened with them. He's trying to get some of that sauce. I think it's that, but he should have been gone.
I tell you what I love about him more than anything else is you will go back to not this year's national championship, but the year before's national championship when he gets pulled at halftime, and Tua comes in, and Tua drives him down for a score. You know who the first guy is to celebrate with Tua like he threw the touchdown himself?
That's true.
Yeah. Jalen Hurts.
Respect.
And that's what, I mean, that's to me what's beautiful about this game. This game has given me so much more than it's ever taken. And it's those opportunities. When you see that, you're like, Man, that's what this game's about.
Don't let your Texas bias show here.
No. I like the move from him. I mean, he's battle tested. He's been through some things there in Alabama.
Yeah.
And I think the Sooners are excited about having this guy. I mean, this guy, if I was on a program, I would love to have him as my quarterback. Just the mental aspect of the game of what he's been through and what he's overcome. I think he's going to be a great fit.
I would hug Tua, but I'm still out. I mean, what the hell y'all talking about? You
staying here to hug you? Alabama legend. Yeah.
He celebrated like it was his own victory. When was the last time you ever did that? Never. Never did.
What victory? What victory?
Darnell, what's next?
Speaking with college football, to a story that's starting to go viral, LSU football star linebacker Devin White, who actually just declared for the NFL draft, is notorious for riding his horses around campus. He owns 7 of them and rides them to classes and even does presentations with them. White says they're like his children. He loves taking care of them. His horse, Daisy May, is very popular with students around campus.
I bet.
Y'all think this adds to the draft stock?
That wasn't a good look, that picture, though. Look at all the people just taking pictures of him riding around. Look at that horse.
He just chilling.
Look at that horse. Hell no. Get off
you know
camp.
How much it costs to take care of a horse?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Horse's not a dog.
Oh, a horse is, they're in Compton all the time. There's Compton Cowboys. I grew up with horses all the time. Yeah, it's real maintenance.
Real
maintenance.
That goes to my question. This is raising, how can you afford 7 horses?
Stipend. I don't know.
In college,
I have
7
no,
horses?
I have no idea, but I know one thing.
I see that guys young with man, 7 I know where they, friends, but never
yeah,
7
I know where they like. I know where they like horses. They like them in Denver. You come on out of the Broncos, man. They'll take you, right? The Broncos, horses, it's a natural fit.
Anybody in Texas riding horses?
I mean, I do. I'm from Texas, so I see that all the time. So that's not a stranger to me. But same time, when he gets to the NFL, he's going to have to just, you know, get less attention to those horses.
Less attention.
Yeah.
That's he couldn't pull up to Arrowhead Stadium on a horse?
No, not around Eric Berry, because, yeah, no.
Oh, yeah.
He could ride Thunder out at Mile High Stadium. You know, Thunder rides out there. You see Thunder, right?
Wait a minute. Eric Berry is scared of horses?
Oh, he's terrified.
You didn't see the video on Marcellus?
That's the only thing he's scared of. He's not scared of anything else but a horse.
But a horse?
But a horse, I promise you. So
really?
If he goes to Kansas City, he can't bring them horses.
Time for That Dude's Dudes, sponsored by Captain Morgan. Drink responsibly. Captain's orders.
All right, let's talk about the big uglies in the trenches. Whitlock special. All the big boys who don't get enough attention out there. Let's go with number 3, Patriots defensive end Trey Flowers. Flower power. I got the power. Patriots beat the Chargers 41-28. It was worse than that score. And my man, Trey Flowers, had 1 tackle, 1 sack. Watch how he gets this sack of Phillip Rivers. First of all, don't show me your hands in your stands, damn it. Move the hands back. Okay, so now we have my man, Michael Schofield, who's going to put his hands on the outside. Oh, no, Trey Flowers has inside hand position. He's going to use that power to lift you up like a hot air balloon, get you up in the sky. Oh, you have lost leverage. Now my man, Eckler, is going to come through a little eager and get a chip block kind of on Van Noy, but what it really does is put a 201 on Michael Schofield. Oh, you know Trey Flowers sees that, feels that, and knows that I could get skinny in this gap right now and take advantage of it. Eckler has realized his mistake. Too late. Now you got to have a target area. You know where you got to hit these quarterbacks. Soft, put them on the mattress with the pillow. Not low. That's the old NFL, Trey Flowers. You were flagged on this play, and they took away the sack, but still. Your target area needs to be higher, but an amazing play, great technique.
He got flagged for that?
Yeah, as he should have. Number 2, Colts defensive line, Jabal Sheard. Let's go with the snowman right here. Colts, we know they lost to the Chiefs 31-13. But 4 tackles and 1 sack for my man, Jabal Sheard. You can see, Patrick Mahomes, take that. Bad conditions, especially here. Look at the entire line of scrimmage in the snow. And then you look at the rest of the field. I used to hate when this used to happen. The rest of the field looks kind of clear. You're like, damn it, why are we lined up here on Frosty the Snowman? Bad traction. You know, you're like, damn, these cleats ain't going to work. But, hey, let's do what we got to do. Jabal Sheard comes out with a little dance move. Dance to the music. And this is why you put that wiggle on. Shake what your mama gave you. When you do this to offensive linemen and they react to it, what you do is put them on their heels. Now we're going to see as the dance move continues. Uh-oh. Where are you going to put your hands? Schwartz, hey, your wrist right now. You're going to lose this hand-to-hand combat because Jabal Sheard sees that you are off balance because of that little dance move. Look at the footwork. Everything's nasty. Weak punch. And now Jabal Sheard locks him out. Look at the strength for that. and you got him standing straight up in that position, there's no recovering from it. All you got to do now is put down Patrick Mahomes in the nice, soft snow. Jabal Sheard, number two, that dude of the week. Now we're going to go.
Colts only highlight. That's the only highlight they had.
It counts. Number one, Chiefs linebacker Justin Houston.
Yeah, now Houston, we're talking.
We have a problem right here. Justin Houston went out there, two tackles and two sacks as they beat down on the Colts. Now we see how he gets to Andrew Luck for the sack. He's standing straight up. That's a little alarming. Why is he standing straight up? And he's like, okay, in this position, that's fine. I'm looking in at the ball because I'm on the road. And now Justin Houston gets off. Look at this positioning right now with the footwork. Look at that. That once again, we see that stutter stepping and that chopping. And it's throwing the offensive lineman off. So now when you do that, you come inside. Oh, my God, you got the wiggle on him. Oh, look at this great move right here. He's thinking to himself, I'm about to hit him with the college swim move. But he's watched that dudes before. He's realized maybe you shouldn't do the swim move. This is why. Oh, you try to hit him with the college silky swim, we call it. This is the danger of doing a swim move. If it doesn't clear, oh my God, you're gonna get put in ICU. Yeah, doesn't want to get put in ICU. He said, I know y'all been watching film. Look at that. So he get him with the silky swim move, slide, puts it down, dead arm him, go inside the gap, get skinny. My man, Justin Houston, you're the dat dude of the week.
Respect. All right, that's great job, Marcellus. Let's move to Dallas, where Jerry Jones has already made it clear he's committed to Jason Garrett for the foreseeable future, but might be looking to shake things up elsewhere. Earlier in the week, Garrett walked back his claim that offensive coordinator Scott Linehan would definitely be back. And now it sounds like Jerry is keeping his options open, saying, quote, you've got to look at what your alternative is. I'm pro the Cowboys tweaking their coaching staff, and particularly their offensive coaching staff, because I thought Dak made some progress the second half of the season, but not enough for me to stay committed. I just think they can do better than Scott Linehan. I think they can diversify this offense even more. I'm like Jerry. I think Jerry has his eye on someone that he thinks may pop open. And so they need to keep their options open and make that move if it's available.
I like the consistency. I like them keeping this coaching staff one more year. Give me Amari Cooper in a training camp. Let me get an entire offseason with him. Look at the numbers, the before and after, in terms of points per game. They improved. Total offense, pass, rush, third down percentage, really. They went to fourth in the NFL all the way from 29th before Amari Cooper got there. Dak Prescott did improve. They were 8-3 once Amari Cooper was on the roster. Everything improved offensively. And that was in the abbreviated season. So I said, give me Amari Cooper in offseason. Let's see what we do.
Yeah, I would say keep it the same. I think, now, understand that Scott Linehan and I were teammates at the University of Idaho, so I'm a little bit biased in my in my breakdown here. But Dak Prescott, second best season he's ever had completion percentage, second best season he's ever had 22 touchdowns, second best he's ever had passer rating. Here's what I would say. What you have to understand is Dak Prescott's strengths coming into his career were really about his physicality, his ability to run, his ability to do the zone read stuff and get on the edge. Now the prime of your quarterbacking career starts after you're 32. You won't get to 32 if you allow him to play like this. So I think this is mostly by design. You're asking your coordinator to grow a quarterback whose primary skill coming out of college was his physical attributes, not his football kind of passing acumen. So I think this is part and parcel of what you're trying to do, because think about what's going on in Carolina right now. We have seen one of the greatest athletes of our time in Cam Newton, 29 years old. Dave Tepper, their owner, has talked about him sitting out next season, the 2019 season, because his body is so beat to a pulp. Yeah. You cannot survive. It's not a long-term survival when you play quarterback that way. So I think this is by design, by that coaching staff, by Jerry Jones, getting him to his prime. Your prime doesn't start as a quarterback anymore until you're 32 years old. You used to be walking out of the league at that time. It's the way the game is designed now. So I say keep the staff the way it is.
Yeah, I agree. Well, being America's team, they're under a lot of pressure. It's just how it is. You don't know this unless you're a Cowboy, you know, looking from the outside in. Is it the coordinator, or does Dak have enough icing You know, he has the cake, but he has enough icing to make this thing happen and go all the way. So, you know, that's yet to be seen. But they have potentially to do great things on offense, obviously with the line and the way Zeke Elliott runs the ball. But for me personally, maybe Dak needs to get a little bit better or change up the coordinator job. But at the same time, if you keep them all together, the longer they are together, the better they will be later on.
DJ's point to me about Dak needs to get a little bit better, and I think that's what Jerry, why he's still like, I'm not so sure. Jason Garrett and these guys have a stare. Well, we think we did great. We went 8-3 once we got Amari this, Amari that, if we have Amari. And Jerry's sitting back saying, this ain't good enough. I put together a team that I don't believe, he, in his mind, shouldn't have gotten embarrassed by the Los Angeles Rams.
But that wasn't Dak's fault. I mean, that game, the reason they're in Cabo right now is not on Dak. It's that defense. And look, if you want to improve Dak Prescott, it's going to happen two ways. One, he continues to improve in the offseason and do his thing in terms of mechanics, relationship with Amari Cooper. Two, this draft, draft a receiver. Like, I mean, look, I love the draft, the last couple of drafts for the Dallas Cowboys, but it's time to stop playing. DK Metcalf, Ole Miss, 6'4", 230, number one receiver. Some say he's going to go mid, late 20s. Please, somebody, A.J. Brown, somebody get him another number one receiver to put everyone in their proper position. Too long they were going with Cole Beasley as their downfield threat. Man. And then we're indicting Dak Prescott, who I say needs to get better, but give him more to work with.
I would also say, you know, you want to look at the coaching staff, and their defense was pretty phenomenal this year, but you get into a game against the Rams where the Rams base everything out of a wide zone. They're 18-19 handoff, 18-19 pitch, 18-19 toss. That's what they base out of. And then you're going to try to run games and run blitzes against a zone team. You will get gashed 100% of the time. And the fact that you didn't change that up and you gave up almost 300 yards rushing, you can't do that against a zone team. So we're sitting here talking about the offensive coaching changes. Mm-hmm. How did you not look at that and say, man, I mean, that's what the Rams are. The Rams go right back to the Mike Shanahan late 90s teams that I was on. They're 18-19 wide handoff. They're 18-19 zone. That's what they run.
But wasn't that thrown off when C.J. Anderson comes out there and he's bowling ball down the A-gaps? So right. It's not so
it's
much
all, so. It's press backed into the A-gaps. The 18-19 stuff, that to me, the wide zone stuff is all about getting back behind the center. Mm. It's getting people to run further than they want, cutting off the backside, getting them on the ground, and then getting back in that A-gap. And
the Cowboys needed to get more the safety in the box. They had two high safeties trying to, you know, make sure they stop.
And then they're trying to run games by pinch and loop. And
well, you have to run games. We got two high safety because you got to take
right.
You got to compensate for not that extra guy in the box. But get that run cover three, cover one. Get that safety down right there because after first half, you know what it is. You know what the slow lead is.
Let's move to Pittsburgh, where Antonio Brown's future remains up in the air. Steelers owner Art Rooney says it's hard to see Brown back with the team next season. And a trade appears to be inevitable. But new Buccaneers head coach Bruce Arians, who coached Brown when he first came into the league, says the receiver has changed and became, quote, too much diva. Brown responded on Twitter, writing, quote, he didn't draft me. He drafted Emmanuel Sanders, same guy who missed rehab to go on networks to talk about me on a situation he had zero clue. Mm. Arians now wears Kango hats. Get out. In glasses, but I'm a diva. Done seen it all, then they say we're friends. Stop lying. Wow. I'm staying clear of Antonio Brown. The diva wide receiver, him and Odell Beckham Jr., it's nice to have in the regular season, but when it matters the most, I can't count on these guys. And there's just too much controversy and distraction with these guys. I steer clear.
That's funny, though. Bruce Arians, he's like, hey, bro, you really feeling yourself too, bro? Like, I can recognize what that feels like being a diva. Can you, Coach Arians? I'm not going to stay clear of him. I never want the locker room to be a chorus of choir boys. I don't need everyone to have the same personality. I need actually for coaches at times to coach, which means manage schemes, manage personnel, manage personalities. Like, sometimes we get deluded into thinking that if the locker room isn't just right, a coach can't do his job. Where I was born and raised in the game of football to think, no matter what you give a coach, if he's a great coach, he's going to figure this thing out and extract the good and great from it. So I'm not standing clear of that talent. It's too tremendous. Bring me Antonio Brown. We'll have a discussion, and we'll deal with what comes.
Here's what I know about these playoffs in general. Show me the team that won the line of scrimmage on both sides, and I'll show you the team that won every playoff game. You show me the last time one team in the NFL, and I'll wait, the last time they were one receiver away from winning a world championship. I'll wait.
Close? I got some close ones.
Oh, you got some close ones? Did they win? No, they didn't win. Nobody has ever been one receiver away from
Terrell
winning.
Terrell Owens broke his leg, but he still
came. He still played football, and they lost.
Well, they lost. Balled. I mean, I'm just – all I'm saying is, would I do it if I was managing a team? Would I want that headache? No, I wouldn't want that headache. Does he have supreme talent? Absolutely has supreme talent. But I wouldn't want the headache. I wouldn't want to have to manage it. But somebody will. You know why? Because there's not a coach in the league that doesn't have an ego that says, hey, man, under my expert tutelage, I'll get the best out of him. We'll win. And that's how the league operates.
All right. I'm not steering clear of him. I feel like Antonio is at a point right now where he needs to change the scenery. I feel like he needs to go somewhere else where he gets a fresh start and they get to give him a fresh start. He spoke on that he was going to speak on it, but it's a lot of things that he feels is going on or went on there that led to the situation where they're at now, whether it's his doing, the Coach Tomlin's doing, the organization's doing. And I just feel right now, like he said, he's such a tremendous talent that he's going to come in and give you everything that you want. It's just, I feel like right now, he's at a point where he's feel like he's in a corner and everybody's attacking him, and he just needs to have a fresh start somewhere else.
Obviously,
that's just how I feel.
Obviously, James, you know Antonio a lot better than any of us. Hmm. You were with him in the last couple weeks. Rumors that y'all were going to do an interview or whatever. What type of mindset is he in? Does he still want to be a great, great player?
That's no
and
question.
Does winning matter to him, or is it
winning,
just
winning matters a lot to him. I wouldn't say it's over the stats, but it's close. And right now, Pittsburgh is in a situation where they weren't winning. And, you know, maybe he wasn't getting the numbers that he wanted. And, you know, maybe he felt slighted because of the whole, you know, situation of the MVP, you know, being given to Juju when he's the guy that's taking doubles, you know, every
Isn't
game.
Isn't that childish? We're talking about team.
You're
MVP.
Talking, to, you're talking, to, but you got to realize you're talking about receivers. You're talking about guys who, it is a team sport.
Yeah.
But receivers are judged on individual numbers, you know, and a lot of that, all of that comes from your quarterback. So you have to have, you know, a cohesion, an understanding, and get along, you know, with your teammates in order to get the numbers that receivers are looking to get and get the accolades that they want to get. It's no receiver out there that is a high-profile receiver that's saying, you know what, if I get three catches and we win the game and I get 25 yards, I'm great.
Mm. Let me ask y'all this. If you're Aaron Rodgers, are you going to the front office saying, please bring me Antonio Brown?
Aaron Rodgers has his own issues to deal with, and I don't know if
he needs more talent to play with.
He certainly needs more talent, but at what cost? And that's not just financial. That's also team building and the chemistry. It's a fragile situation there with a new head coach. It's a lot going on there. But I know what you're saying. Is the top quarterback saying, do I want this top receiver? And I would say more would say yes. AB has a great case. Like, if you really want to be the defense attorney in this one and protect AB, I can see it. I have a rocky relationship with my quarterback to the tune of my second receiver is getting better opportunities and numbers, in part because I'm taking the double teams, and in part because we ain't cool, and I know those 50-50 balls are now going somewhere else. There was a time in this year when we were looking at Ben Roethlisberger like, where's your accuracy to only AB? There were times where AB's wide open in the end zone and Ben's throwing it out the end zone. I remember this story. I went to San Diego as a free agent, and I got there, and they were telling me a story of some offensive lineman who never lifted weights. And this offensive lineman used to put his hands in the rice bowl and just do this all day. And then one day got on the field and hated Ryan Leaf so much,
said, hey, you want to get your stats going this game, D-line? Go get it. I've seen it before, so I'm just saying the AB situation may be a little sabotaging.
Uncle Jimmy's here to help us talk about our approval rating for Colin Kaepernick, the social justice warrior quarterback.
You stupid. Oh, Uncle man. Too black, too strong.
Bobby Seale today, what?
I'm just existing in a state of vainglorious.
We are protected
by the red, the black, and the green. With the key!
All right, we have a original member of X-Clan here, Uncle Jimmy, to talk about Colin Kaepernick. All right, Uncle Jimmy, here's a highlight from our discussion earlier about Kaepernick. Oh, I can't decide if Colin Kaepernick is a world-class Twitter troll or a world-class attention whore. I go back and forth. I know what he's not. He's not the modern-day Muhammad Ali.
We have so many different contexts of culture, so many different complexions of culture, so many different varieties of culture. And now Kaepernick and Nessa wants it to be monolithic. Check in with Kaepernick to do what? I'm for the cause because I'm from the cause, and I wish that they would get their understandings in alignment with the cause.
All right, Uncle Jimmy, you're Kaepernick's biggest supporter that I know.
Yeah, he's big, all right. Look how big Cap is on that shirt. Cap gaining weight.
We're pretty hard on your boy. What's your take?
Damn, Jason. You know what, man? You ain't my sister child. You ain't my sister child, and you ain't got all that stupidness from your mama's side of the family. I'm gonna tell you that right now.
Denounce him.
I got to check the DNA, man. For real.
He owe you.
How many times I got to tell you? Colin Kaepernick is a symbol. Nothing he does has to make sense. You take everything so literal. You want everything to make sense. Some things ain't meant to make sense, Jason. They just is. It is what it is. Cap just is what he is.
What is he?
Yeah.
He's a symbol, Jason. He's the Confederate flag.
Huh? Are you a symbol? You ain't making much sense.
He's the Confederate flag. We got Cap. They got the Confederate flag. They're symbols.
What?
They don't have to make sense.
He's a General Lee and a Duke of Hazzard. Where are you going with this?
I don't like the Confederate flag.
Yeah, where you going?
That's my point exactly. You're not supposed to, Jason. It's not our symbol. Cap is our symbol. See, time might come, you might get a new job. You might move into a wider neighborhood than what you're living in now. And all you got to do to prove that you down with the struggle is just throw on a Cap jersey on. Or maybe you like to kick it with Becky with the good hair from your history class. All you got to do to let people know that the struggle is real is just put out a little tweet about Cap, and everybody know, but Whitlock's still keeping it real. He went to the Million Man March. Cap is a symbol, Jason. Ooh. You see how this worked?
I caught that part.
Not really.
That was deep.
Not really. Let me ask you that one. Let me ask you this. Are you going to watch the Super Bowl?
Most definitely. Remember how G-Money said New Jersey City? Most definitely. Hell to the yeah. As a matter of fact, I just got my little invitation from Cap and Nestor to their Super Bowl party in Atlanta. Matter of fact, Jay-Z, Beyonce, Travis, Tech, Prozac, Blowfly, they all supposed to be there.
What?
Oh, so, hold on. So you can go to party at the Super Bowl, you can party at the Super Bowl, after the Super Bowl, you can do all the Super Bowl parties, but you got to protest at halftime.
Jason, what did I tell you it was? It's a symbol. Symbols don't make sense. They make you feel good. Got it? let me put this deal on the table for everybody. Let me make this clear. I've consulted with Dave Chappelle and the black delegation, and the offer is on the table right now to trade Colin Kaepernick for the Confederate flag. Bring all them damn flags down. And we're gonna quit acting like Colin Kaepernick's Muhammad Ali. I should lick him.
Man, I ain't gonna lie.
It's on the table.
I'm making that trade right now. And we gonna throw in Nessa in the second round. Like, you can have it all, man. What the hell?
All right, you know Cap's a dumpster fire for me. I got him at a 36. Job performance, impeccable. He's a 25. He stirs Twitter like nobody's business. He's a Twitter troll. He's a 25. All-time greatest. I got him at an 8. Character 3. Mm. Authenticity, big fat 0.
Damn, a donut?
Damn.
Donut history?
Damn.
Yeah, that dude a donut.
Authenticity, 0.
I've never seen that. All right, look, Cap, let you know you're still my dog, and I'm keeping it objective. I actually gave you an increase in job performance because your Nike deal and your Nike platform, when used effectively, is bigger. So I give you that. All-time greatness, that goes up a notch too. Your voice is still loud out there, but character, woo, you took an L with this one. And I know it's not all you, it's Nessa. Y'all figure this out.
Hey, man. Hey, get your girl. Get your girl, man.